And in the studio with me with the Weekly Trail Report, Charlie Sturgis from Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, same thing, muddy, soggy.
Yeah, let's go. It's muddy and soggy. And, you know, quite honestly, I think if you really just maybe get out there and take a look a little bit, at times it's improving really quickly. So, you know, a standard we might like to have out there is something of the area of 90% of the trail is at least dry or tacky, because especially in these conditions, it's hard to tell everyone to, you know, not go out when there's obviously going to be a few puddles. But things have dried up. Things are shedding water faster because there is already water in the dirt. So it's getting better faster than it had been during the spring when we had a lot of dust and it was turning to kind of paste. So this is a better scenario at the moment. And certainly any water is good water at the moment. So it's just one of those wet springs. That's what it is. So.
Okay, how'd things go last night?
Hey, you know, we had a great Mountain Madness night and just can't thank the Canyons and their staff enough. They did a great job. I mean, they make it super easy. They serve a killer hot dog in case you haven't had one. You know, you have to succumb every once in a while to a hot dog, and they had a killer hot dog and taco, chips and salsa and that kind of thing. So it was really good. And we had a really good turnout, especially from both the public side and also organizations that we basically work with. So that was tremendous. You know, everybody from Centerville Basin, Summit Lands, Utah Open Lands, WTA, even Corner Canyon showed up. So really a good chance for the public to engage and find out what's going on. And we had a few new sponsors, so I just want to give them a quick mention. Claudia out at Hugo's did a little thing, a single track crack coffee, which we thought was kind of fun. And so we had that as one of our premiums out there. And John down here at Nick's Cafe chipped in a few coupons for dinners down there. So it was nice to get a little additional local support. So give them a little kudos for that. Appreciate it. Outside of that, you know, we're just going into another weather-filled week, I guess, is what it really looks like. I think if you just kind of gear up for maybe being able to get your ride in or get your run in, but just watch the weather really closely, you probably can pull it off. Also, just keep a real eye on our Facebook side of life. You know, I think our trail report on our, I haven't looked this morning, but you know, we redid our website, so the interactive map and I think our trail report still is off of there for the moment, but Facebook is a great way to go.
Are your crews getting out, though? I mean, there was quite a bit of
You know, actually, our crews have been able to be out a lot. So, yeah, and actually, with these storms coming and going, it's really important to, give us a heads up if you see some issues out there, trees across the trail. We'll get out there and get after them pretty darn quick.
Okay, is that it?
You know, that's it, Leslie. I hope everyone has a good Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks, Charlie.
You bet.
It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trail. KPCW News Time now, 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's KPCW Local News Hour. Well, using some new software, the Park City Real Estate Market closed out its first quarter of 2015, about a month late, but here with a look back, our Park City Board of Realtors President Nancy Tallman, along with Carol Agle. She's the chair of the Board Statistic Committee. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk really briefly just about what's changed. I mean, there are some new improvements just in the terms of how you're reporting the numbers, because as I mentioned, you've got something new and that kind of delayed the reporting for this week.
We just changed our MLS software, so that delayed us just by a week or so, and then Carol and I were both traveling, so we couldn't get in here.
Yeah. So it's not any special software that gives you something different?
Nope.
No improvements or something?
We improved our MLS system, and now it's better for mobile, so that it's better for us to help our clients when we're out looking at houses. We can pull things up on our phones instantly.
Great. So how did things look then for the first quarter of 2015? Looking at the press release, it looks like the number of sales and prices are up from a year ago.
I think we wanted to say the single word that we're amazed at is stable. We have not, we can't remember a time when we took the average price of all the single family homes in all of Park City city limits, and the average price went up zero from the year before. And if we take our bellwether neighborhood of Park Meadows, where we sell a house a week for years, again, the average price changed zero. Now, we'll talk about what's happening in the median price in a minute, but that pretty much blew us away when we looked at this home prices that sold in Jeremy. The average price changed zero. Now
so when you look at the median price, what happens?
The median price went up because all the lower end of everybody's buying from the lower end of the market. And we're going to talk about why we're hitting that ceiling too.
Okay. Well, let's talk about then the bright spots. I mean,
that's a fine thing. Yeah. We think stability is wonderful.
But yeah, the median price went up 13% in the Snyderville Basin, 25% in the Jordanelle for single family homes. And Carol and I were just talking, and we think that, you know, as being in town becomes more pricey, people are willing to move out a little bit farther and pick up some of those homes that are more attractively priced.
Mm-hmm. As long as they don't have children in the school district? I mean, is that kind of the...
Well, Snyderville Basin, of course, is Park City Schools, but Jordanelle is not.
Right.
Yes.
So what we believe is happening is we've run up against a sheer ability of buyers to pay. And here we're talking about primary home buyers who are earning incomes, and their real buying power has not significantly changed. They may have had some raises, but they've also had increases of expenses. And so we're up against a ceiling of what people can pay, not maybe what they'd be willing to pay. Maybe they'd be willing to go that extra $40,000, and they're simply tapped out according to the lenders.
Mm-hmm. But you had said off air something about the affordability of Old Town condos. That sounds like a bright spot to me.
Well, the condo market is just really fun for those of us who like to geek out on statistics. The Old Town market, we're still at a median price in Old Town of $415,000. Now, for our computation, Old Town runs from the top of Main Street through the bottom of the Park City Mountain Resort. So median price means 50% of all the sales happened below $415,000. And we're really wanting to wave that in front of outfits like the city council to say, hey, when you're going to have an affordable housing requirement for a developer, how about instead of building something, eating up new land, using resources to build, how about you work out something where they absorb some of this affordable inventory and let families move right into the heart of Old Town, where we have plenty of resources already in place. Buses, everything's there. We don't have to recreate it.
Yeah, but are these, you know, 2-3-bedroom condos? I mean, we're talking about...
2 to 4.
Mm-hmm. So a family could move into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm. Well, and a family might be two people and a dog.
Sure, sure. But it's not the studio apartment with a lockout or something.
Correct.
Yeah. Good. So what's kind of lagging?
Well, so, you know, the big story, I think, is inventory. Our inventory is at historic lows right now, and we just got some stats for May, you know, the beginning of May, and we expected inventory to rise in May when people are putting their homes on the market for the summer season, and inventory actually decreased 4% in May. So we expect inventory to definitely affect our market, and, of course, the lack of inventory is putting pressure on prices as well. People are going to have to pay, you know, they may have to pay a little bit higher price because there just aren't as many houses to choose from.
Or there may not be as many options. I mean, traditionally, you think low inventory equates immediately to higher prices, but our inventory went down starting January of 2013. That's now 2 years ago. And as you've heard, average prices have not statistically climbed, except in certain neighborhoods. And we may be up against a place where buyers either want new and exciting or they're tapped out on what they're able to afford. We've had low inventory. It's a little lower now, but we have not seen a corresponding one-to-one correspondence of increase of prices.
Hmm. What we are seeing, though, I mean, on a similar chart like that, or a similar slope, I should say, is the number of short sales and foreclosures, huh? I mean, that's gone way down.
Oh, completely crashed. And nationwide as well. I just came back from Washington, D.C., where I was at the National Association of Realtors mid-year conference, and pretty much nationwide, distressed property is no longer really a factor at all.
All right. So what are some of the other...
Well,
national numbers that you
saw
that would correlate to Park City?
Inventory's down nationwide. Dr. Yoon, who's the chief economist for the NAR, said people are staying in homes an average of 10 years instead of 6, as was the previous trend. So that's part of the reason why we don't have enough inventory. People aren't moving. And also, we haven't had a lot of new construction since 2008. So we're behind. You know, we have more people, but we don't have more houses. And I would say the same thing in Park City. They talked about how Utah is the number one state for job creation in the country. We have a lot of people moving here and moving to Park City to take wonderful jobs in the Salt Lake Valley or Provo. We're kind of a bedroom community for those full-time people. And, you know, they're moving into a lot of these homes.
Yeah. So what properties kind of getting stuck on the market? Because I was interesting to read that you have seen some listings sell within a few days if they're priced right and well presented. I mean,
right.
Give me an example of that. I mean, what does
oh.
that look like?
Gosh, you know, something barely comes on the market and there's four offers, you know, immediately.
And what is that? I mean, is it it's Prospector, it's Park Meadows, it's a condo?
Prospector, Ranch Place, Silver Springs, a lot of these places where full-time people are looking to live. And, you know, in that, as Carol mentioned, in that affordable range, maybe, you know, just under a million or right at a million, which I know that sounds crazy, but that's, you know...
Yeah,
that's where our
market
is. Those homes are just being snapped up really fast. And then, you know, we're seeing other homes that if the seller is too aggressive on price or they haven't taken the time to present their home, the house will just sit. So it's even though we've got a fast-moving market, there's no guarantee that your home is going to sell for, you know, overpriced or if it's, you know, in poor condition, doesn't present well, it may just sit. And we've seen a lot of those as well.
So in the, just to look at the bigger, the whole Park City city limits, now this of course goes out to the White Barn basically, the median price of homes that sold in the city limits was $1.3 million, which is what it was last time we've talked. And we are seeing a real buyer mentality against going above that price point. And that's a mental. Because people at 1.3, they're not going to 1.4 because they wouldn't qualify for the loan at that price range. But they have a mental block against going much higher. Now, if we take the same question, what does it cost on the median to live in our whole Snyderville Basin? That includes out through Silver Creek, Jeremy, et cetera. We're now at 800. We just passed 800,000 for that. That number had been pretty much stuck. Now, if we take a single neighborhood to bear out what Nancy was talking about, right behind the blue roof is the Silver Springs neighborhood. During the recession, homes in there were going in the fours. It's a great, convenient neighborhood. It's seasoned well. The landscaping's filled in. Kids can walk to school. You're right situated between all the trails and all the fun. And that became the insider's hot neighborhood. We had people wanting to move there from Jeremy, or people, new people wanting to move there. And so that median price is now at 780, which is a very big rise since the recession, but that's a 10% rise over the last year. But here's another number that you could spin a whole different story. The number of sales is down 29%. Well, that fits right in Nancy's thing of inventory. But you could see how somebody would take that statistic and go, oh, the number of sales in Silver Springs is down. Well, that's the inventory story.
Right. Real quick, has the board approached Park City Municipal to kind of talk? I mean, as you mentioned, you suggested that city look at, instead of building affordable housing, acquiring some of the
The board has not taken a position at this time, but, you know, we do have a legislative affairs committee, and we're looking at everything.
But did I buttonhole two city council people in the last 24 hours, and I'm on KPCW with that same message, and went to the Lower Park Avenue planning meeting that was this week and made that point. So sure, we just think, wow, how green to use existing property.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, I think, you know, again, with inventory being so low and it being a fast-moving market, you know, people still need professional assistance. You know, I had, you know, we know how to price homes. We know how to present them. We can actually help people get the most money possible for their properties. And so we urge people to consult with a real estate professional.
And another caveat, if you're thinking of selling your home, we really recommend that you speak to a realtor as much as 2 years before you really want to do that, because that realtor can go through. Let's just say it's a typical two-person couple owns the house. The realtor can go through and say anything like, now the market would like to see this. And then it's not between the two decision makers. They can say it, and you can get the estimates and then work again and say, should I make these? I'm seeing some people in Park Meadows knowing that what they really have is a teardown. So why would you bother fixing that house up? And they need somebody to tell them that blunt truth. On American Saddler, we've had two houses sell at 1.5 that are both being torn down. So that means somebody's buying a lot, in effect, with a $65,000 teardown cost. And so no matter how nice you might think your house is, get somebody who can help you tell the truth. And maybe you need to paint that pink bathroom beige or whatever it is and be thinking about it. Because your next question is, well, where are you going to go? And so an awful lot of people now are signed up on automatic email systems where they get emails the day anything's listed in their parameters. Let's say you would like a single story or a main floor master house under $1 million in such and such neighborhoods. So you can start learning that market just by checking your email for a year before you want to buy. And that's kind of what it's taking, we think.
All right. Carol Okay. Eagle, Nancy Tallman with Park City Board of Realtors. Thanks. It's 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Summit County's law and order officials are encouraging residents to be vigilant about protecting their property. In the studio to give you some ideas about how to safeguard your property, I have Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez along with Prosecutor Matt Bates. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So anecdotally, it looks like the police log that we received showing a number of home and auto burglaries. Is that the case statistically as well?
I think statistically, right now, we went through a rash of burglaries.
Both home and
vehicle,
auto?
Correct.
Yeah. And what are you saying, Matt?
You know, what we're seeing a lot of are these crimes of opportunity where people are coming into neighborhoods early in the morning, you know, 1, 2 in the morning, and they'll get dropped off and just walk down the street, and they'll check cars to see if they're unlocked and just try door handles, and they will only take stuff out of cars that are unlocked. And, you know, we wanted to get the word out about this because it's crimes of opportunity are very simple to stop. Just lock your door. Don't leave valuables in the car.
Yeah. Are you able then to I mean, are people wearing gloves so you don't have fingerprints? I mean, are you doing the investigations on them? I mean, how do you handle that?
We're doing the best investigation we can on them. But, yes, they're using whether it's latex gloves or just, it's cold outside, just gloves to keep their hands warm. They're not leaving a lot of evidence behind, and they're in and out so quick that we really don't have an opportunity to identify who they are. We have been able to identify a few and brought them to justice, but the majority of them are just, as Matt said, looking for that crimes of opportunity, an open garage door, open car door, and they're just rifling through it and taking off and taking what they can get.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have regular patrols. Do you switch those up? So, I mean, or does somebody know the schedule? So it's like, oh, he just drove by and now's my time. You know, here's my hour to get through.
We try to vary it. We try to make it not scheduled. We just try to go out there and randomly do patrols, lights out. And I actually have a bet with some of my deputies that I will buy the first deputy a steak dinner, that either I get a call from a homeowner complaining that the deputy woke them up saying your garage door is open, because that tells me my deputies are in the community. They're actually out there patrolling, preventing crimes from happening. And one of the interesting things is, as they patrol, we may never know statistically what crimes they prevented by actually being out there. It's one of those things you can't track. But I do know that they are out there in the neighborhoods and doing active patrols late at night.
And certainly if they saw somebody walking along the street at 1, 2 in the morning, they're going to stop, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just question what they're doing in the neighborhoods. And it could be somebody out walking their dog. But, you know, most times after midnight, it's usually cops and robbers that are out and about playing the game.
Yeah. So one of the burglaries that caught my eye was the vehicle break-in at St. Mary's Church recently. It's the report said no forced entry, some four cars, I think, broken into. So, I mean, what was it? Just the thinking there, hey, I'm at a church, I'm safe?
I can only assume so, yeah. I know I don't lock my car a lot when I go to church for some reason. But
what kind of car do you drive?
A very old one that, there's usually nothing valuable in there. But, you know, we have a lot of nice cars up here. And we have, for some reason, people who leave, valuable electronics in their cars. And, yeah, I'm kind of baffled by that, that there were those break-ins at the church.
Yeah,
they're pretty brazen.
They are.
And following that church break-in, the robber went directly to the ATM at the Tanger Outlet Mall, where the report said that there's no surveillance camera. I mean, it's like the person knew that. I mean, and I can't believe that there are ATMs that don't have cameras. I guess
a lot
surprised.
Of ATMs are privately owned, and they don't require camera systems. And obviously, the ones at the banks, they're owned by the banks, and they have camera systems throughout. But a lot of the ATMs at your malls and other places are privately owned and do not have camera systems in them. So that they may have known that didn't have a camera system.
Okay. Well,
But we still, you know, the outlets do have cameras throughout the outlet malls, and we're looking into those surveillance cameras.
And I'd also heard about, and this, again, just from friends, about the blatant break-ins that we were seeing at the Quinn's Junction trailhead. I mean, I think people were there with, like, a baseball bat just breaking in the windows.
That happens occasionally. We certainly don't see that as much anymore. Those are kind of the more rare cases. What we see a lot in our office are more the unlocked cars. And I think that's probably in part because cars these days are more commonly equipped with security systems. If you break something, you're going to set an alarm off. You're going to make noise, and it's much easier just to find that one car that somebody left unlocked.
Mm. So that's really where it's happening, you know, just checking door handles. Mm-hmm.
It is. Mm-hmm. You know, we certainly do see occasional forced entries where there's a broken window or something like that, but it's much more common, it seems like, to see these unlocked cars getting burglarized.
And that's going to happen because the purse is sitting right there.
That there's something very valuable that whoever's breaking into the vehicles is willing to make that kind of noise. They're willing to break a window because they see something of value.
Yeah. So any suspicion why the burglaries are happening? I mean, is it getting to get drug money or something? I mean, NPR has been running a series this week about how heroin is no longer a big city problem. I mean, it's made its way into small Midwest towns. Any idea why people are breaking in?
It's usually for something along those lines. They're trying to fulfill a habit that they have. And the majority of the time, I would say that is drug related. They're breaking into vehicles, they're taking what they can, change, cash, computer, cell phone. They're breaking into construction sites, sealing tools. They're doing whatever they can to feed their habits.
Yeah. So for construction sites, I mean, what do you recommend? I mean, need a fence and a lock and a chain?
Fence, lock, and chain. And one of the best things that a construction worker can do that has tools is write down their serial numbers, model numbers, serial numbers, and identify it, clearly identify it with their name on it. Anything that they can do to, if a suspect were to take it, that we can easily identify that is their equipment. It's amazing how many people, even myself included, you know, you're at your home, your TVs, your electronics, we don't record our serial numbers. Recording those serial numbers is probably one of the most important things, because if they go to pawn it, they have to record that serial number, and we have a pawn list that we can look into. And we can identify that serial number immediately. So I would encourage people, home electronics, construction, anything that has a serial number, write it down.
Okay. Any other recommendations?
Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Seal it up tight. Close your garage door.
Don't leave your electronics in the car.
Mm. And if you see something, report it. It's amazing how many people, 2 hours later, you know, I thought I heard something, but I'm calling now because it's suspicious. If you see something, report it immediately.
All right. Hey, real quick, before I let you go. So, of course, you were on the chase of the bear for the last couple of weeks, finally captured and hauled away. What was the county sheriff's role in all of that?
You know, our role is mostly supporting DNR. They're the experts in wildlife. We were there just to make sure that, you know, the citizens of Summit County weren't in danger, but support them in their efforts to tranquilize that bear and get him moved up into the Uintas. So hopefully he's up there and enjoying a new lifestyle, a new view up in the Uintas. But our role is majority just to support them.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that the bear hadn't hurt really anybody or any animals, you know, other than turning over trash cans, I mean, at what point do you decide that we're going to capture and release or shoot? I mean, where would that
That falls on DNR's, what they decide. They felt, I guess, it was close enough within residential communities. Close enough. I mean, it was literally on somebody's back deck eating sunflower seeds. So they felt, well, it's probably too close for comfort. We need to move this animal along. And we just support them at that decision. But that was their decision to make.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. Nope. Memorial Day. I know Glenn's coming in. I would encourage everybody to come out to the Memorial Day event on Monday. But Glenn's going to be in next to talk about it a little bit more, but I encourage people to come out for that Memorial Day event here in Park City.
Yeah, will you be doing increased patrols given the holiday?
We will be out there patrolling. We'll be out there just looking into our neighborhoods and just keeping everybody safe. And we want everybody to go out there and have a great Memorial Day. The weather looks like it's going to break a little bit. So hopefully people can go out and have a nice barbecue and, you know, something to drink and enjoy their Memorial Day weekend. And we just want people to be safe.
Yeah, we sometimes see Highway Patrol do roadblocks or road checks. I mean, anything like that?
I don't have anything planned for that this weekend. What Highway Patrol has planned, I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. Hey, Justin Martinez and Matt Bates, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now, I have Glenn Wright, adjutant with the Park City American Legion, Post 14. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the Post is planning a Memorial Day ceremony. Tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, what we consider is we consider it the city and county's Memorial Day ceremony. You know, we organize it. You know, we've asked the city and county to kind of adopt it as their own. It doesn't cost the city or county anything to do it. You know, we do all the organization, but we want it to be a community celebration, a community memorial for those who have been lost in our many wars.
All right. When, where?
At the cemetery on Kearns at 9 o'clock on Memorial Day.
All right. And so what's going to be happening there?
Well, we've got the Troublemakers who will lead off with the national anthem. Then we've got welcoming and closing remarks by our post commander, Chris Smith, and vice commander, Brian C. And the keynote speaker is Diane Foster. In holding with our new policy of the city and county will kind of adopt the Memorial Day ceremony.
All right. Years past, I've seen like lots of flags being placed around. Does that happen by you folks?
That does not happen by us. There's another group that does that. And, you know, we don't even have the flags, but they go out there and place the flags by the veterans' grave sites every Memorial Day. I was speaking to Larry Warren about that out in your lobby here, and they do that. He's on the Glenwood board, and they do that for the veterans at the Glenwood Cemetery. So there are a couple of organizations that take care of that every year.
All right. So let's talk a lot. I mean, I see the debate every year about Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Memorial Day only for veterans?
No. Memorial Day is to honor our war dead, and it should be a celebration by the entire community because there's a saying in the veteran community, some gave all and all gave some. This is the day for those who gave their all. We have... over the course of American history, there's probably in the neighborhood of 1 million war dead. Most of it in the Civil War and World War II. You know, World War I was a major contributor. My connection with Memorial Day is when I got back from Vietnam in the mid-70s. And as I was transferred around the country in my civilian work, I would always try to find a Memorial Day ceremony as I was in a new community. The first community I was transferred to in Massachusetts, I was going through the veterans part of the cemetery, and what I noticed was there were, of course, a lot of World War II veterans were already starting to die off in the mid-70s, but then I saw a big contingent of guys my age from the Vietnam War. And it wasn't really noticed at that time, but now we're starting to notice the suicide rate among returning veterans is 3 times the national average. So we are getting not only war dead that occurs in the war zone, but those that occur afterwards.
Hmm.
And they may not be actually in the statistics as war dead, but they certainly are.
Right. Veterans Day then itself?
Veterans Day is to honor veterans, and that's in November. On November 11th, the date of the World War I armistice.
Okay. And so what else do you guys, the Legion, what do you do besides the ceremony?
We have kind of gatherings about every quarter, very informal, just try to get local veterans together to come out and join us and, kind of have a few beers and tell war stories and, see what's happening today. Our last event was at the Wasatch Brew Pub a couple of weeks ago. And we had one at the No Name back in November around the time of Veterans Day. There's a lot of veterans in this community.
I think I heard like
there are a ton. The census says there's like 2,000 veterans in Summit County. I wish a lot of them and their families and everybody else would come out for Memorial Day, because certainly all of us have friends who did give their all. I've run into personally just in the last year from Vietnam veterans. This happens to be a bunch of slow mover, low and slow pilots from the Vietnam era here, dust off pilots. These guys were just incredibly courageous in picking up the wounded in Army helicopters. And some, I've met in the last year probably four other forward air controllers who flew the spotter missions here. So all you dust offs and Nails, Coveys, Sundogs, Ravens, and Rustics, make sure you come out on Monday.
All right. Well, you know, I'm perhaps naive or young enough just to really remember the Vietnam War as wearing my POW bracelet, but caught some of the shows that PBS did on Vietnam. Did you happen to see any of those?
I see some of them. Unfortunately, I still have a difficult time watching some of those shows. Brings back too many memories for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were done very well.
I do catch them now and then again.
Yeah. Okay. As always, Glenn, thanks for your service. And again, that's happening, the Memorial Day ceremony, 9:00 at the Park City Cemetery there off of Kearns Boulevard.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.